currently with the ongoing military assault against the Palestinian people and against President Arafat as well, there are a group of foreign civilians here who've come here to stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people, and in this case, to basically be human shields, in a sense, to try and protect the Palestinian people against the ongoing military aggression by Israel. I, a couple of days ago, entered President Arafat's compound. I and an Irish colleague of mine were on an ambulance that day, serving as international protection for the ambulance, driving around Ramallah, picking up the wounded and dead the first day of the invasion. And we had gotten a call that there were wounded people at President Arafat's compound, and any ambulance that had approached until then had been shot at and turned away. We decided to try, given that we were internationals on board and we could communicate with the soldiers in English and try to get access to the compound because we were far. We tried, and after initially being shot at, we were granted access to the compound after about 3 hours of negotiation.
So you were able to take wounded people away from the compound to medical help?
We were able to take two people outside of the compound to the hospital. One was in critical condition, and another had received a bullet wound and needed to get to hospital. Myself and my Irish colleague, Quiva Butterly, stayed behind in the compound to report from inside and to, you know, to help treat with a Palestinian doctor more of the lesser, lightly wounded people inside, and to try to start mobilizing international attention as to what was going on, really going on inside the compound, and to try to get some international intervention to end the siege on President Arafat and on Ramallah in general.
Just to clarify, do you have medical training yourself, or you were there primarily as just support?
No, I was primarily there just to lend my presence as sort of like a human shield, in a sense. But I was, you know, throughout the day and also in the compound assisting, sort of being instructed on the spot what to do and how to assist in treating and then also in moving injured and sometimes dead people as well.
And how many wounded and injured were inside of President Arafat's compound?
There were the two more serious cases which we removed from the compound, and then there were maybe 10 lesser wounded inside at that time. The next day, I left the compound, and when I left, we also took put on an ambulance and took with us one President Arafat security personnel who was killed on that about an hour or two before we left.
So, are there still international civilians inside the compound?
Yes, there. Since Saturday, we've increased the number of international civilians who've been able to get into the compound to lend their bodies, basically, as human shields to try to prevent Israel from going in and assassinating President Arafat. There are now 34 international civilians inside. Additionally, we have internationals in Ramallah in different homes throughout the city of just, you know, normal people trying to lend their presence in different neighborhoods and areas and trying to prevent Israel from going around more than they already are and doing house-to-house searches and summary-style executions. Also today in Beit Jala, which has been occupied, and in Bethlehem, there were a large contingent of foreign civilians there who were shot at by Israeli artillery, five sustained injuries from shrapnel, and had to go to hospital. Luckily, none of them are seriously injured. And now Israel has declared Ramallah a closed military zone. It has ordered all foreigners out. It has, including foreign journalists, and it has stated that, you know, anybody out, including foreigners, will be shot at. In addition to that, Israel has started deporting foreigners from here.
Can you say a few words about how your delegation and your organization sort of came together to do this kind of work and what kind of impact you think you're having?
Well, there's really two groups that had been working together to bring foreigners here to the occupied Palestinian territories to the objective really was to bring them here to work in solidarity with the Palestinian people and together with them, using nonviolent tactics to resist and oppose the occupation of the Palestinian lands. The two groups are the International Solidarity Movement, of which I am a full-time volunteer, and the Grassroots International Protection for the Palestinian People. In other times when there isn't full-scale military invasion and attack going on, we work together with Palestinian activists and the Palestinian people to remove roadblocks, to march on checkpoints, to rebuild demolished homes, things like that. Times when there is military assault and the Palestinian people are coming under attack, we take action and lend ourselves as sort of human shields to try and protect the Palestinian people as we can.
To what extent does your presence, do you think, offer protection to Palestinian people?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, we are unarmed, we are civilians. We just put ourselves basically in places where Israel is attacking. And, you know, we've done this before, for instance, in Beit Jala last August, when Israel was pounding that city with helicopters, gunships, shooting indiscriminately at civilian homes and in civilian neighborhoods. They still attacked while we were there, but it sort of raised the stakes for Israel. Israel, unfortunately, holds Palestinian blood cheaper than the blood of Americans or British or French or Italians. And so by putting foreigners in different places, it does tend to have a mitigating effect on the violence. Now, that's not to say that Ramallah and other cities right now aren't being completely pounded. And like I said earlier today, there were foreigners who were shot at and injured by shrapnel. So it certainly seems that Israel now is prepared to shoot at any civilian, regardless of where. And, this is a policy that must be opposed.
There was actually some coverage of your work in the Toronto Star today. What relationships with media are you able to create and maintain?
I think we have a very good relationship with the media, and I think that our presence inside the presidential compound is bringing attention to otherwise there would be no information from inside the compound coming out, because the phone lines have been cut for a while, electricity was cut. We are able to get out information and get out stories from people, you know, who are here witnessing with their own eyes what is happening. You know, the media, I know in the United States, I've had many, many interviews the last couple of days, Europe, South America, Asia, even today Australia. So I do think the media is paying attention, and now it's time for our governments to pay attention and to take action. And it's time for the international community to take action. As I've said before in other interviews, I don't see why the people of East Timor, the people of Kosovo, the people of Bosnia are more deserving of international protection and international intervention than the Palestinian people are.
So what do you think would make a difference? Do you want to see like a UN kind of presence in the area? Does your organization have a position about what you're calling for in terms of...
We don't have a specific plan except the end of occupation. I mean, we really would like to see Israel remove its military forces and its settlements from Palestinian lands, and to do it as quickly as possible. And ideally, there would be an international team here to monitor the progress and to assure the safety of the Palestinian people.
Could you say a few words about the climate in general in Israel and how people are reacting to what's going on? Well, first, what do you see among Israelis? How are they reacting to this escalation of violence on the part of their government, and also, I guess, on the part of a few suicide bombers?
I live in Ramallah in the occupied Palestinian territories. I've been living here for the better part of 2.5 years. I mean, I have many Israeli friends who I've spoken to today, and, I know Israelis feel scared, and I know Israelis feel like they're under threat. I know Prime Minister Sharon is using the rhetoric that the state of Israel and its existence is under threat. I think that is a major exaggeration and an irresponsible exaggeration. And he's using it to beat the war drums to gain support for his policy, which is basically a policy of almost ethnic cleansing here. I would say to the Israeli people, that the way out of this situation, the way out of ending this cycle of violence and revenge and more violence, is by ending the occupation. It is the root cause of the problem. The occupation itself is violence. And though it is the occupation that creates the conditions in which Palestinians find themselves taking action like becoming suicide bombers.
Okay, in the town of Ramallah where you're located, is that where you are right now?
Yes.
Yeah. Can you say anything about the conditions of life for Palestinians on a sort of everyday level and then how that has changed and become worse in the last few days?
Before this last invasion, you know, the outskirts of Ramallah were, still held by Israeli tanks and Israeli soldiers. All the entrances to the city, no matter how you would try and get in or out, you had to go through a military checkpoint. These military checkpoints are maintained by Israeli soldiers, armed. It is impossible to drive your car through. People have to line up and wait to walk through just to get to the other side, which is still on Palestinian land and on roads that lead to Palestinian cities. To go through, you have to show your identification. Soldiers will turn people back for absolutely no reason. They make people wait for hours and hours and hours. If the people don't line up the right way or if they get too noisy or something like that, soldiers will shoot in the air. They will shoot at people at checkpoints. Pregnant women have been shot. Innocent, you know, people just approaching a checkpoint have been shot. The week before this last invasion, or at least for the week before this last invasion, the Israelis would close the checkpoints at 6 p.m., thus preventing people from traveling into the city after a certain time, despite the fact that people work and can't make it to back to their home in time for the Israelis to close the checkpoint. And again, these checkpoints were located between Palestinian areas. This was not between, between a border or the Green Line with Israel, with the State of Israel. So life was pretty, it was very difficult, certainly, and Palestinians were coping. But now people don't leave their homes. If they do, they will be shot on the street. And now you have Israelis going house to house doing searches and, in some cases, executing people on the street. These are the conditions in which Palestinians live and have been living for years. And these are the conditions, this is just a very, very, very small, minor glimpse of it, in which, Palestinians feel like they have no hope for the future, in which they are humiliated on a daily basis. And this is the occupation. This is what it is. In addition to the settlements, this is how the occupation plays itself out.
There's obviously a lot of speculation in the international media and the international community about, what Sharon's ultimate plan is here. What does it look like from your point of view?
Certainly from after being in the compound for the evening, I can tell you that, while Israel will say that it's not intentionally trying to harm President Arafat, the soldiers seem to have the freedom or possibly the orders to just shoot at the building he's in. And this is not a fortified building and is not building a bunker, and it is certainly possible that one of those bullets or one of those tank shells will, penetrate and will kill President Arafat. I believe Prime Minister he said last week that in one of the leading Israeli newspapers that he regretted not killing President Arafat, at the time Chairman Arafat, in Beirut, and that he regretted giving the Americans his assurances that he wouldn't harm President Arafat. I think it's quite clear that Prime Minister Sharon is pursuing a very personal vendetta that he has, and he's dragging the Israeli people, and he's dragging the entire region to a place that I don't think is good for anybody, that will lead only to more violence and more bloodshed.
My last question, what motivates you to keep going and on the path that you're on? Are you motivated by hope or by fear of what's going to happen?
I'm motivated by the fact that the people that I know in this city, who are my neighbors, the people that, the hope, yes, for a better future and for an end to the conflict and an end to the violence, certainly. And, at this point in time, this is what I feel how I can best contribute myself and my time. And if my presence here makes Israel think twice about what it's doing will help bring an end and a peaceful resolution conflict quicker, then I think I'm doing something.